And good morning, Smashville. Thank you for joining us here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name is Braden Gall alongside Derek Mason. Josh Upton filling in for Constable Chase McUrban back in the studio as the Chase McCabe as Keith Urban is sweeping the nation. Poll questions abound. We'll get to the bottom of all of this and issue some citations a little bit later on in the show. But Josh Upton filling in admirably back, of course, at the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. And as you heard in the update, we'll get right into this here because we got a huge game to preview with the Tennessee Titans, of course. We'll talk to Teron Davenport coming up at 8 o'clock. We've got the Philly Godfather and all of our picks, of course, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Josh Ward from WNML, one of the only few decent football games in the SEC this weekend, Missouri at Tennessee, a critical game for both Jeremy Pruitt and Barry Odom in the East. So we'll talk with Josh Ward, talk a little college football today. Not a ton of action on the college gridiron this weekend, so we will just barely briefly touch on a couple of games in that world. Syracuse, Notre Dame, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, the only real big national games to keep an eye on as far as the playoff implications are concerned. The Titans and the Colts, of course, one of the big focuses of today's show as well. So we'll dive deep into the matchups on what exactly we're looking forward to from an individual matchup standpoint. I think it's going to be really interesting to see where we fall on that. However, the Preds last night lose again, wrap up their long CMA road trip, of course, with a loss to the Coyotes, 2-1. They do score late. They do score a little bit late there, but was basically down 2-0 for most of the way, and in large part a cheap goal on the first one there to Pekka, a really cheap goal for Pekka Rinne. I think he'll tell you that. And then, of course, no defense at all on the second goal. But more importantly, as Josh Upton told you there in the update, P.K. Subban placed on IR, and Victor Arvidsson looks like he's out 6 to 8 weeks. So, oh, by the way, the power play 0 for 5. So we are now, if you're counting at home, folks, that's 0 for 15. And I think they were 1 for 5 the game before that, D-May. So we're talking, you know, 1 for 20 at this point on the power play. Could not be a better time to come home. I'm sort of in the frame of mind here, Mace, that I'm just like, all right, that's a long, long, long road trip. Peter Laviolette yesterday said, no, we're ready to come home. We're ready. I think it's sort of like, you know what, let's just, it's over, it's done. Let's move on, let's regroup, we're coming home. Let's refocus and recalibrate and just kind of put it behind us.
Well, it looked like a team that was tired yesterday. Exactly. You know, they got in the first power play. They were careless with the puck a few times on their first power play. The Coyotes was able to get it to the other end of the ice a few times on the first power play.
And, well, a shorthanded goal on a exactly. really bad goal.
It
by
was
Pekka.
Just oh my goodness! But it was a weird bounce. It was really a weird bounce. And then they had several opportunities. After the first period, I think the shots on goal was like 15-8, something like that, or 15-6 in favor of the Predators. So they were getting shots on goal, but it just wasn't going in. But to me, it looked like a team that was tired. That's what it basically looked like. Peter said it yesterday that they were ready to come home. And whenever a head coach or a player said, we just want to go home, that tells you, like, listen, this road trip has been a long, grueling one because they play some really good teams.
Yeah, that's true.
And this was the swing that we talked about when they started off, you know, hot and the best team. We said eventually it's going to end. They're gonna go. They're gonna be in that valley, and they're gonna have a tough time, whether it be due injury or them their bodies just being tired. Well, this was a combination of both, injury and them being tired. So, you know, you expect them to come back home, regroup, and you know, get some legs up underneath them, and get back to their winning ways. Because, you know, when I asked Peter yesterday about the power play, he said, "Listen, it would be great if we had practice time. We just don't have practice time.
It's one of the weirdest things
exactly.
about hockey.
Absolutely. We just don't have practice time to fix it as quickly as we want to. So it's almost we're trying to fix it in game. And right now it's just not working.
It's a weird thing about because basketball, I don't think there's still some downtime between games, but like hockey and baseball, mm-hmm. your practice is like the first period of the game. Like that's
yeah.
that's when you're trying to figure stuff out. And you know, when you've been on a long, grueling road trip, I mean, they've been out there since what November 6th, probably they flew out. Maybe November, yeah, probably the day before the game against Colorado, they probably flew out. Give or take, either way, they've mm-hmm. been out there for they've been out away from home for a while. And I think. One of the things that I always noticed about hockey is trying, and I asked Adam Vingan this, I think it was yesterday, and I just mm-hmm. said, how do you evaluate, when do you start to evaluate trends or stats or things about a team? And he said Thanksgiving's always a really good time to sort of step back from the team and look at what's going on, whether they're good on the power play or, in this case, bad on the power play. But I also think you sort of can break up a season into chapters, and you can kind of see what a team is and what they're doing through mm-hmm. these chapters. And I think the first chapter of the season was that really hot start when they went 5-1 and then Pekka got hurt. Uh-huh. That was the first, to me, that was the first chapter. The second chapter was Rinne's injury, right? Uh-huh. Rinne's injury was the second chapter, and UC Saros comes in and, you know, he goes what, 5-2 or yeah, something like that, 5-2 in the second chapter. And then the third chapter sort of started on November 1st when Pekka came back into the lineup and has been dominant ever since. But I feel like this needs to be the end of that third chapter. The road trip out west, this needs to be the start of the fourth chapter, right? Like uh-huh. we need this. All right, we've got this little block of games. We beat Vegas. We beat Tampa. We beat Boston. We beat Colorado. We made the big comeback against Dallas, and then we were out of energy, and the mm-hmm. tank is empty, and you lose three games, and the power play sucks. Well, that needs to be – you got to put that behind you now.
Yeah.
And you got to restart, kind of reshuffle. You come back, you got Los Angeles coming up on Saturday, and then you go Monday, Wednesday next week, Tampa and St. Louis at home. So you got three big ones at home. Regroup, restart, and I think kind of – to me, it's sort of like let's kickstart that new chapter a little bit.
Well, they're going to have to. Because they are dealing with the injuries are just mounting up right now for them, and they can't afford to just walk into a game and expect to just go out there because they have one of the best goalies in the world and some of the best players, or that front line is awesome, even though PK is gone for a bit. They're going to have to – this is where a team's resolve will be really tested right now. And luckily for the Predators, it's early rather than later in the season where – you know, if you're going to deal with injuries, you want to deal with it in the first half. So, you know, leading into playoffs, you have everybody back healthy and fully ready to go. So this will test their resolve. This will test the locker room as far as, you know, guys staying on course and guys not trying to do too much. And if something goes wrong, no one's pointing fingers. We're just going to hunker down and battle through this. But I expect that, you know, them on this two-game losing streak, I expect it, you know, to stop pretty soon here and when they come back home. So
yeah, and
was it two or three-game losing streak? Three-game losing streak.
Three. They finished the road trip 2-2-1, and I think the injuries are the key here because, again, there's little times of the year where you're going to have, you know, dips and swells, and you're going to have to struggle through some things. And certainly the power play is a major issue right now. But I think, you know, Ryan Hartman at one point last night was a little banged up. Kevin Fiala at one point last night was a little banged up. Pekka Rinne gets the delay of game penalty for knocking the goal off,
yeah.
which is just really strange. You don't see that very often. And it's – so, listen, I mean, they've got enough people. They've got bodies that need to step up. Fiala's probably one of those guys that needs to step up in the absence of Victor Arvidsson now for at least we know now what
you
his injury
is,
6-8.
The young guy?
Tolvanen, it's an interesting angle. He's playing well down in the AHL. I haven't checked mm-hmm. his stats in the last couple of days, but I want to say he was getting off, you know, he's gotten off to a decent start, not a great start, but he's doing what they need mm-hmm. him to do. So that'll be an interesting – we'll ask Crispy that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour because I think that's a really interesting angle because if you lose one or two more guys, you're sort of running out of – starting level players, and you need guys like Matt Irwin and Beteto and these uh-huh. other guys to step up on the D line now because Subban's out for a little while, and we don't really know what's going on with him. So
Well, luckily I got to get the Kings coming up, so hopefully that's somewhat of a relief.
Yeah, new coach and everything. So that'll be tomorrow, of course, here back in Nashville. Finally, 7 p.m. Of course, will be your puck drop coverage at 6 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Hale, again, filling in for the guys, Darren and Donch, of course, in the midday. You know, Constable Chase McUrban not with us today either. He's busy. He is alive. He's not. He's still with
us.
He's
putting together another album.
Yeah, he's putting together. He's working on some riffs and some chord transitions. My God, that was brilliant. By the way, at 102.5 The Game is a poll question. You can vote on who wore it best. I guess you could say you, me, or two Chases. And people were like, where Nick got left out of this Keith Urban Hare thing. And I was like, we can put him back in. We can do that. Like, if people want to put Keith Urban's hair on Nick Hale, go for it, man. I'm not stopping you. All right, here's the thing about – let's get into this Titans game for just a minute here before we get to Josh Ward and talk a little SEC football. But I wanted to get into you just your thoughts on the entertainment value of this game for fans across the country, for fans that are Titans fans. I think there's a chance that we have an extremely entertaining football game between the Titans and the Colts. We'll get to that when we come back right here. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Friday edition, Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Nick Hale going to be filling in for the midday show, guys, this afternoon, so you can catch him there. Excellent job yesterday. D. Mason, Braden Gall, of course, Josh Upton producing back in the Game Nashville studios. We are here at Kitchen Note, so sorry, Kale. Sorry, Constable. Y'all don't get any biscuits.
You sure don't.
Sorry,
we get
man.
All the biscuits, all the coffee, whatever we want, and y'all don't get a damn thing. But quickly, I know we got to get into the Titans, but you know what?
We may not have time to get into the Titans right now because Josh Ward's coming up, and you got a bone to pick with what? All construction companies?
All construction companies. I mean, you got to do your employees a little bit better, okay? You got to treat them a little bit better. When you build these scaffolds and you build them 4 miles up into the sky.
So this is a crane.
A
that
crane,
is on the corner,
yeah.
Because we're
crane,
kitchen
not
this
the scaffold.
This is the corner of Korean Veterans Bowl. Let's set
exactly.
the scene, D-Mace.
Exactly.
On the corner of 4th Avenue and Korean Veterans, right there by the Bell Tower and Martin's Barbecue and all that good stuff, there's another new one going in. They've got the two or three big ones that are going in around it. The Joseph. I don't know what that is. I guess that's a hotel, I'm assuming. So they built you guys have all seen cranes everywhere in Nashville, but they build these
huge,
really tall, skinny scaffolding things for cranes, and you don't like what they're making this young man do.
Yeah, I really don't like this because I've always thought that, okay, once you build these things up, and you told me the neat way they kind of put them together because I never
did
that.
It is cool to watch them put them together.
So I thought, you know, once they put this thing together 5 miles in the sky, there's some type of pulley mechanism that the individual, he or she gets in, and it just hoists them up. Slowly,
an elevator,
but hoist
some
them up. Some type of elevator pulley.
Yeah, yeah.
I take the old school pulley. Just hook me on and somebody underneath just pulling me up. I take that or they're cranking the wheel. I take that. But they have these poor individuals, not poor, but I'm saying, like just individuals at 5-something in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, they got to walk up all of these stairs, like climb all of these ladder stair things. And this poor individual, at every level, he would stop, sit there, take about 5 deep breaths, and then readjust his boot bag, and then climb up again. Stop, readjust his boot bag, and climb again.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking about these serious industrial cranes that you see at every one of these big major builds that's downtown or anywhere else, these big cranes. It is manual labor to get up there.
That's like two workouts.
I watched it happen when I lived at the Encore, and I was watching all the ones next to, you know, on the other side towards the river being built. Mm-hmm. I would watch these guys, and they had to go 80 feet into the ground below the surface of the road to even build the crane in the first place. Yeah. So they would, I mean, these guys would be going probably, I don't know, like 40 stories?
Uh-huh.
I mean, 35 stories. You're going 30 stories, but it's not a staircase.
No.
It's climbing up a ladder. It's
a
30
steep ladder.
Now they're all contained and it's very safe, but like you literally are climbing probably 30 stories in a you know, on a ladder to get to a little box that's probably I'm assuming it's got
self-contained.
There's some amenities. Yeah, there's some amenities
some
up there.
Things up there you need.
I wonder about the bathroom.
I think they have some type of potty system.
We're working on that with my daughter right now. The potty system.
Our man here
on 4th and Demo,
is he up there?
No, he started at right about the time the show started. He is barely halfway up. It's 6:22, and our guy, what should we call him? Ralph?
Yeah, Ralph.
Ralph is about half the stories up to the top of the crane. It's taken him 20 minutes.
God, I feel
and he's barely halfway up there.
Do you think once Ralph get up there,
let's give him a round of applause.
It takes him at least another 20 minutes to gather himself.
I just like, you better bring your food, your lunch, like
everything.
You're not coming down for a bathroom break.
Heck no.
All right, real quickly here. I'm with you. I always noticed that when I was living down here, that how crazy that is, like with all the modern technology, mm-hmm. to literally build a crane on top of itself that can withstand all of the bad weather, and it's structurally strong enough, and you can't put a way to get a guy up there faster than like a 45-minute climb. It's ridiculous. All right, so what'll be far more entertaining than watching our boy Ralph climb up to the top of this tower is going to be the Titans game. And just real quickly here, because we got Josh Ward coming up next, and we'll talk Vols and some SEC stuff in just a minute. But I was thinking about this last night as I'm looking at the matchups and I'm looking at the teams, I'm looking at the strengths. The Titans defense is good. I think they're going to have some bend but don't break this week against the Colts. I think the Titans offense is playing as well as it's had all season. Mm-hmm. I think there's a chance this is a really, really entertaining football game. We've had some really ugly football games with the Titans, even last year. But I just think this could be one of those sit back and enjoy. Even if your team loses, Colts or Titans, mm-hmm. I think objectively, I think we're in for a really entertaining high level of football on offense in particular showcase from both teams this weekend.
I think so, because both quarterbacks are playing. The Titans are starting to hit their stride now on offense. Andrew Luck has been playing really well the whole season. Their offensive line is one of the best offensive line in regards to pass pro in the National Football League. Andrew Luck hadn't been touched in 3-4 games now. Our offensive line is getting better as the season progresses. So it's almost one of those things where both offenses are going. Now you try to figure out if the defense is going to be able to stop, if our defense can contain and stop Indianapolis. Can Indianapolis defense finally, rise up to the occasion and play a good game? I tend to bet on our defense. That they will contain Andrew Luck in that offense. But that offense is, the way it's designed, it's hard to stop.
Because I think contain is the right. I don't think you can stop. I think contain, right? You can't.
Exactly.
You can't hope to contain. You can, what? See, I'm botching
you
the
can
whole
only,
thing.
You can't stop. You can only hope to contain.
That was
we're
awful.
Both are getting it.
7 o'clock yet.
But because this is a tight end centric type of offense, it's hard to stop. And they got two or three tight ends that can play. And then you factor in T.Y. Hilton and some of the other guys on offense. It makes for a chess match,
well,
so to speak.
I'm fascinated with what Dean Pease will employ, because what worked against Tommy last week was blitzing and bringing pressure and getting in push in the A and B gaps up mm-hmm. the middle where Tommy doesn't like it, and no Gronkowski, so no tight end. Well, neither of those things are going to be true this week.
No.
You're not going to get pressure up the middle because of how good that guard center triangle is in the middle there with the Colts. They are really good with Quentin Nelson and Ryan Kelly, two first-round picks playing there. They're really good up the middle. So Luck's getting protection up the middle. And they got like five tight ends they're going to use. So it's going to be a very different schematic game plan from Dean Pease on defense. I would be interested to see if Malcolm Butler, and I want you to think about this because we got to take a break and then we got to go Josh Ward and we'll talk some college. Mm-hmm. But coming up 7 o'clock, we're going to get into some really deep individual matchups for the Titans-Colts game. And one of them I'm interested to see, because Eric Ebron is playing great football and he's split out a lot. Is there a chance you see Malcolm Butler playing on a guy like that? Because he doesn't have the speed, mm-hmm. but he's got the physicality. Maybe there's a chance. I just want to see, we'll get your thoughts on how you stop Eric Ebron, because he's basically playing as a big, bulky wide receiver right now for the Indianapolis Colts. However, when we come back, we're going to get into some college football. We're going to go up to Knoxville. We'll talk with Josh Ward, WNML, probably the biggest game you know, the two biggest games in the SEC are taking place in this state, mm-hmm. and those are the only two big ones that really matter, and they're both very critical for bowl eligibility for both Vanderbilt and, of course, Tennessee. So we'll talk some Missouri and some Tennessee when we come back with Josh Ward from WNML. I want to tell you guys, though, about Xfinity. And obviously, you guys know everything there is to know about all the products in the house that they offer when it comes to television, when it comes to Wi-Fi, when it comes to even mobile now you can add to your Xfinity package. But the one thing that, you know, you don't expect your cable and your television provider and your content provider and your Wi-Fi provider to give you is that peace of mind. And Xfinity Home Security System is the way to do it. I added mine in our new house, and the wife and the kids never felt safer. I leave early in the morning. They're there a lot during the morning time when it's still dark out, and they love that Xfinity Home System. You get the little sign in the front, huge deterrent. You can set it on your Xfinity Home app, which is right on your phone. So as I've said many times before, you go on vacation, you fly out of town, you go to work, whatever, you forget to set your security system. You just pop up the app. You can look at all of your video cameras. You can watch in real time what the dog is doing or what's going on around the house. So you can check it out, and then, of course, you can set your alarm and set off the alarm. There's cell phone coverage if in case the Wi-Fi system goes down. They got all kinds of backup systems in place for you. So the Xfinity Home app and the Xfinity Home Security System will give you peace of mind, as well as all that great content that they give you as well. So get started and call 1-800-XFINITY, visit Xfinity.com, or drop into an Xfinity store today for more details. Welcome back. Morning Drive here live from Kitchen Notes, of course, in downtown. It's downtown Nashville. Omni, the biscuits are out, D-Mace. The biscuits are out. I saw some orange cranberry biscuits back there.
Oh, man.
They got some pecan pancakes back there, so we'll get you some food.
Good.
We'll get you some food here in a second. Josh Ward, not to make him jealous, but he does it to me all the time on his show. I'll come on his show, and he'll be like, yeah, we're hanging out here drinking beer and eating chicken wings at so-and-so place. And I'm like, thanks a lot, Josh.
Like, Josh. Yeah, if we can trade a shipment, maybe we need to start working out some of those deals when you come on the radio. Wherever we will, we'll send you some of our food, and you can do the same. Especially if you got some breakfast spots, I'll hop on that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Kitchen Notes, baby. Downtown Nashville at the Nashville Omni Hotel. Well done. All right, Josh. So in a really awful week of SEC football, the two most important games probably taking place with the two teams in this state, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, but, of course, Tennessee and Missouri. So we've talked about this, you and I have. I felt like Kentucky was a bad matchup for Tennessee from a sort of a weakness and strength standpoint. It turns out Tennessee took advantage of all that stuff. So what is your feel for the matchup strategy here with a great quarterback, a very different matchup for Missouri versus than Kentucky for Tennessee?
Does it make it a bad segment if I say I don't know? I mean,
no.
That's part of the issue at this point in the season. But seriously, I thought you were right. I mean, I agreed. I picked Kentucky to win the game because I thought that the Wildcats would really be able to run well throughout the game, and the reverse happened. Tennessee just about tripled the rushing yardage that Kentucky had. I don't think anybody saw something like that happening last week, but it did. A difference in this kind of game would be that when it was 17-0, Marquez Callaway catches that touchdown pass, so 17-0 at the half, I don't know who really thought, okay, Kentucky's coming back needing to throw the football probably here in the second half. So if it's 17-0 against Missouri, I'm going to like Tennessee's chances to win the game if they have that kind of lead again at half. But they could come back with Drew Locke. It's a more balanced team, and a lot of the attention or the perception maybe around Missouri would be with the quarterback play and Drew Locke, and there should be a lot of attention on him. But Missouri really can run the football and has multiple backs that can do that. And that's why Tennessee is still going to have to be prepared to stop the run. But it's more than that. You're going to have to be prepared for Drew Locke and that passing attack. And that's one reason, another reason that I think that Tennessee was able to, in the second half, kind of just go after Wilson at quarterback was that I don't think Kentucky was really prepared to have to pass protect that much. And Missouri will be. So it's obvious now that we know the result of Tennessee winning 24-7 last week. But I do think this presents a more challenging matchup for Tennessee.
Now, Josh, can you explain the swing that this offensive line has been on? 1 week versus Charlotte, you know, they can't run worth the lick. Garantano can't take a five-step drop. He's getting hit from every angle. And then a few weeks later, they roll up 215 yards against a defense that's one of the better defenses, at least fronts, in the country in Kentucky.
Yeah, it's a very good question. When you're coming out of the Charlotte game and you've had to replace both your left tackle and your right tackle due to performance, it doesn't create a lot of confidence going into a game against Kentucky with the defensive front that it had. But they did play well. Here's my best guess. One would be focus. I think that it's pretty clear at this point that Tennessee was not mentally dialed in for the Charlotte game. But that doesn't explain all of it. I would say another factor would be Ty Chandler. His presence really, I think, kind of opens up what Tennessee's coaching staff feels comfortable calling within the offense. Chandler and Tim Jordan. Tim Jordan ran well for Tennessee. But the Vols also came out, and it was a lot of play action on first downs to open up the game, take some shots down the field. I think that opened some things up, and it made it a little easier maybe for Tyson Elton, the offensive coordinator for Tennessee, in what he was calling. But at this point, we've talked so much about Ty Chandler, I just think it's obvious. Tennessee's running back is so important for what Tennessee's offense wants to be at its best. It's still limited in some of what it can call. I don't think still Jeremy Pruitt or Tyson Hilton believe they can just say, let's line up and run at teams over and over and over again and do it with success. But Tennessee can find ways to run the football. Missouri's had a pretty good run defense. I think throwing is going to be really important this week. But if they can protect Garantano, and that's when tight ends and running backs come into play as well to help the offensive line, then the last few weeks have shown that this offense, despite still some limitations up front, can be successful.
Let me go a little bit more big picture with you here, Josh. And Alante Taylor's a guy that feels like that they found, right? He's a guy that for the future that they found is going to be a dude that they can count on. There's a lot of players that are going to be leaving off this roster that are veterans. Certainly Garantano's back, some of those young playmakers on offense. Who are the guys on defense that you think this coaching staff has identified as future dependable starters that are not just this season but for next season and maybe the year after, that are guys that they think are they're guys that are going to be starters and be dependable options moving forward?
Well, I think maybe the first real positive would be Lonte Taylor, you mentioned, and then Bryce Thompson, who we're watching to see, by the way, does he play this week. Jeremy Pruitt said that he would be ready to go. The corner who took a pretty scary fall last week had a head injury from that. But those are two freshmen, both similar stories in that they were really kind of recruited as athletes, could play wide receiver, could play in the secondary, and Tennessee had a great need at cornerback, so they both have played there and started games together. That's a positive for Tennessee moving forward, that they've gained this amount of experience, and overall have played okay. A big challenge this week against Missouri, of course. So those would be two names that I would say immediately. You at least have another year of Ty Chandler. Next year, with Tennessee having to replace its starting defensive line, Daryl Taylor having another year of eligibility is really important. He needs to be more consistent, but he had four sacks last week. He had three in the Georgia game. He's obviously shown his ability at this point. So as Tennessee continues to try to recruit guys that can come in and rush the passer, Daryl Taylor for at least another year could help with that. And then there's kind of an under-the-radar guy on the defensive line, John Mincy. He's a freshman who suffered an elbow injury in the Florida game, missed several weeks. But I think the staff likes him a lot. It came down to Tennessee and South Carolina. And Will Muschamp liked him a lot. Tennessee was able to get him. And he's probably just going to have to play and maybe start next year. So those are some guys to watch. Most of the offensive side is coming back. I will say that I think on the offensive line, I think you have at least one, maybe two freshmen who will be starting next year. So that's an area where, with what we've talked about here this segment a lot this season, Tennessee is pitching on the recruiting trail, hey, you can play right away, and you can be our guys for the next 3 years would probably be the sales pitch before you go to the NFL.
We'll talk with Josh Schwarr, WNML in Knoxville. Josh, do you believe Pruitt is on schedule, past schedule with this team? Because it seems like, after the Alabama game, after the talk he had with them at halftime, it seems like this team is playing a lot better. From a hustle standpoint, an effort standpoint. But do you think he's ahead of schedule or right on schedule?
Yeah, and I agree with that on the effort standpoint. Everybody in college football seems to be up and down in some ways, the Charlotte game being an example. But each week in practice, I think Tennessee's players have been dialed in and they've connected with this coaching staff, which is a positive sign. I would say that Jeremy Pruitt is probably on schedule. and that over the last month or so, he's kind of caught up. Because after that Florida game, it did not feel like things were on schedule when you were suffering a 26-point loss at home to a Florida Gators team that was trying to get things going at the time as well. But since then, Tennessee went to Auburn and won, played well enough to win at South Carolina, came up short, and then beat Kentucky this past weekend. So being at 5-5, if you go back to August, and we're talking about Tennessee's upcoming season, and a lot of the talk was 5-7 or 6-6. There was some 7-5 talk for Tennessee as well, and you know, really optimistic 8-4 talk for Tennessee. But you know, 5-7, 6-6, the win total was 5.5. Tennessee's right there at 5-5. If Tennessee can win the next two games, then I think it's a huge finish for the season and for the program. If you get to a bowl game, I think you've met your number one goal, and Tennessee has a really fair shot of doing that, of splitting the next two games. Not a given. Tennessee could be any of the three, 5-7, 6-6, 7-5 to close out the season, and I don't think too many of us would be surprised. But Tennessee's in that kind of position to be able to finish off its main goal at the beginning of the season. And I think right now, especially considering some of the early season struggles, that's about all you can ask for if you're a Tennessee fan.
So I agree with everything you just said and laid out, Josh. I think a bowl game would be a huge accomplishment for this coaching staff, and I think a really big first positive step. There certainly needs to be plenty more after that. But if it's a win over Missouri and yet another loss to Vanderbilt, and let's say they follow that up with a bowl loss, how does that all – does that change anything because it happens to be Vanderbilt gets bragging rights for, what, the fourth time in 6 years or the fifth time in 7 years?
Yeah, it would be 5 out of 7 that Vanderbilt would have beaten Tennessee if Vandy wins next week. That would not sit well in Knoxville. It would be a lot worse if you're 5-6 and lose to Vanderbilt. So beating Missouri would help a lot if that's going to happen for sure. You know, with what you just said there, especially with the bowl loss, I guess I would ask if that were to happen, how did you do on the early signing day on December 19th?
Yeah.
I think no matter what happens this weekend and next weekend, immediately a lot of the attention is going to turn to, okay, what does Tennessee get done with the early signing period? Because Tennessee's trying to steal some kids from some big-time schools. They have a few guys that are committed to Georgia who are scheduled to visit this weekend. They're going after guys from Auburn, from Michigan, from Texas, Alabama. So how does Tennessee do with the early signing period? That will greatly affect the mood of Tennessee fans. But getting to a bowl game would I think, keep just about everybody happy. Tennessee fans, though, would never accept losing to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt right now has the bragging rights based on recent history.
Real quickly here, Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, before we let you go, do you think the early signing period is going to help Pruitt because he's a new coach in a rebuilding system, or do you think it hurts his current situation as a new head coach rebuilding Tennessee's roster?
I think he can benefit. I say that with the assumption that some of these guys who say that they're going to come back, like Owen Papo, a linebacker who's committed to Auburn, I think Tennessee can benefit there. He's a teammate, by the way. I think they've done a good job of connecting those relationships. He's a teammate of lineman Wanya Morris, who's a five-star guy who is coming to Tennessee in January. But that is to be determined. Tennessee is swinging for the fences with a lot of these guys. And when you do that, you can swing and miss. But I think Tennessee will have a nice December and will be happy with where it is heading into the second signing day in February.
Josh Ward, always a pleasure, man. Did we ask him for a pick there? You taking the Vols this weekend or no?
Yeah, I've struggled with picks all season long. I've been pretty bad with them, honestly, with Tennessee. So this will make Tennessee
just take Missouri
I
then.
Missouri. I think Missouri comes into Knoxville and gets a win this weekend.
There you go. Josh Ward, WNML. Thanks a lot, dude. We appreciate it.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely, Josh Ward, one of the best in the business covering the UT Vols. Huge weekend in the state of Tennessee. Not so much in the SEC. We discussed yesterday the scheduling is pretty awful for the SEC. Objectively, you can't really argue that. But there are two really big games in the SEC, and they both involve teams in the state of Tennessee. And that could really shape the final weekend in a very, very big way. So we'll discuss those outcomes and get D. Mace's thoughts on the Drew Locke-led Missouri Tigers going into Neyland. We'll do that when we come back right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here at Kitchen Notes. Derek's eating a plate of sugar. I'm eating a plate of delicious biscuits and scrambled eggs and blueberry sausage. Of course, Josh Upton back at the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. And D-Mace, I'll let you finish that delicious candied pecan pancakes and syrup. Is that right?
This is delicious.
I have never met an unhealthier healthy person than you.
Pecan pancakes. Ma'am.
So we'll get to Adam in Portland here. Of course, always our best caller. So Adam in Portland in just a second. But we have a 5-5 Tennessee team taking on a 6-4 Missouri team. We've got a 4-6 Vanderbilt team taking on a 5-5 Ole Miss team. Doesn't sound like a lot of juice, but they are both really important games considering what both teams have, Tennessee and Vanderbilt, coming up next weekend, which is a meeting here in Nashville. If Vanderbilt has to win both games to get to a bowl, although the APR could save them if they go 5-7, Tennessee has to win at least one game. Missouri already got their bowl eligibility. I don't know what outcome you're rooting for, because I think if you're an objective college football fan, the idea of a 5-6 Tennessee playing a 5-6 Vanderbilt for the right to go to a bowl game feels like not only are neither program at an elite level, but they're both struggling to get to that bowl level. It just puts so much more juice on a rivalry that Vanderbilt has owned of late, and it would put so much juice on the rivalry next weekend for the casual Nashvillean, right? Like, if you're a Nashville person and you're not a Tennessee fan or you're not a Vandy fan, that will be a great football game to go to, because you got Kyle Shurmur, you got Garantano. There's some decent weapons and some pieces there, even if it's 2 5-6 teams. Obviously, Tennessee fans want to get the bowl eligibility out of the way now, because I think if you put pressure on them to come here and win that game, it makes it really tricky and dangerous. But, man, that Tennessee-Vandy thing, because it's more balanced now, because Vandy has won more of those games, it puts a lot more juice on that game for Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, it does. What am I rooting for? Well, I'm rooting for UT to win this week, so then they become automatically bowl eligible, and then Vandy to win the next 2 weeks. So then Vandy then becomes bowl eligible. So you will have the two major universities in the state of Tennessee, two out of three major universities in the state of Tennessee.
Talk about Austin Peay that way.
going to a bowl game. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know what Memphis is doing at this point, but I'm pretty sure.
Good team. They got a big one this weekend. Tonight, maybe.
I'm pretty sure they are bowl eligible, MTSU as well. But that's what I'm hoping for. As I look at it, the likelihood of, you know, the Vols beating Missouri is very slim.
You think so, though? Is it just because of the quarterback that you're concerned
about?
I think so.
I picked them to win. I picked UT to win, but because of the quarterback matchup, and the thing is, this team is so. They have so many holes in their team. Even though they're getting better, that how do they respond after a big win versus Kentucky? You know, can they bounce back with another big performance and beat Missouri? Well, I don't know. I would love for them to. I would pick them to win. But if you're just looking at, you know, player by player, it starts with the quarterback, and Drew Locke is one of the best quarterbacks in the country.
Yeah.
So – Can UT score points with it?
And I think Josh brought up an interesting point. If the same situation plays itself out this weekend in Neyland, where they're up 17-3 at halftime, that's great, but it's not nearly as comfortable as it is with Kentucky.
No.
Because that
see what happened with Vandy. They're up.
Exactly. I thought the call it a Hail Mary, I guess it is a Hail Mary, where Callaway makes that catch. I thought that broke Kentucky's soul.
Uh-huh.
Like, it broke their back, it broke the soul, because Terry Wilson isn't equipped on the road to make that big time, that kind of comeback. That's what Drew Locke does every day. Like, Drew Locke doesn't care. They also have three running backs that are averaging around 5 yards a carry. Roundtree's at 5.3. Crockett's the guy who destroyed Tennessee a couple of years ago in Neyland, 4.9 yards a carry. And even Tyler Batty, the freshman, at over 5 yards a carry. They got three backs that are getting touches and producing. They got a tight end who's, I can't pronounce his name, but he's really uncoverable. They've got good receivers. And what people – the Dulander coming back into Neyland to call plays, I think that's – you know, there's certainly some motivation there for him. But what you have to say about this offense, and what people, other coaches, will tell you about this offense, is that it is so – that it's so decisive.
Uh-huh.
That when Drew Locke reads it, he throws it, he's convicted. It's what we want Marcus to do,
exactly.
Right? There's conviction in every – they know exactly where they're supposed to be. It may not always – work, that may not always be the right scheme or whatever. The other team might be just better, Georgia or whatever, for Missouri, but that they're never out of place and that they know exactly what they're doing. It's a very well oiled machine because you got a veteran quarterback who slings it around.
Yeah, and that's going to be that will be the test for UT is can this young defense stay disciplined enough to stop a precision type passing attack, and then they have the running backs as well that can carry the ball out of the backfield, and each one of them are, you know, toting it at 5 yards a clip. So it's almost like this four-headed monster where you got three backs that's running well, and then you got the passing game or Drew Lock that's on his game. So that's going to be the tough part for UT is, you know, how do we – can we stay disciplined in what we do? Even if they get a chunk play, will one of these younger guys look to make a play and get out of position?
Yeah, and one of the things that I really liked about last year's performance, and it looked like a grown football team, like a bunch of – like a real adult football team because they were playing physically, right? They were playing with confidence in the trenches. They need to do that because that's not always what Missouri likes.
Yeah.
So you bring that edge, that intensity, that aggressiveness that we know Jeremy Pruitt wants and that they brought against Kentucky – see if you can do that against Missouri this weekend. That'll be one of the big factors as well. Vandy and Ole Miss, on the other hand, I mean, listen, they scored 7 combined touchdowns in the second quarter last year between the two of them. This could go down to who has the football last. It should be an extremely entertaining football game between these two. This series has always been a little funky where teams come out of nowhere and win big, or it's got them into a bowl game in the past. It kickstarted the Kyle Shurmur offense a couple of years ago. I don't see – to me, this is about Derek Mason's defense.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're going to score. I think Shurmur and Pinckney and Vaughn and Lipscomb are going to score. The question to me is, can they get any stops at all on that side of the ball? And if they do, they can get a W.
Well, here's the thing. Ole Miss is scoring 37 points. They're giving up 36 points. You know, Jordan Tamu is playing really well, 17 touchdowns. But then A.J. Brown, you know, 1,000 yards, 72 catches. And they got Scotty Phillips in the backfield who will, after, you know, I would assume after this game, be a 1,000-yard rusher as well. So they have sort of this three-headed monster on offense where they had a 1,000-yard receiver, a 3,500-yard passer, and a 1,000-yard running back. That's difficult to stop. We see what happened with Vandy last week when they had a lead and allowed Drew Lock to come back with his weapons. Vandy can't keep doing this. If they want to take that next step, if they want to get those recruits to come, if they want, you know, things to start happening, they got to start winning close games. They got to start winning games they're supposed to win. And frankly, they should.
And this is the team that was supposed to be able to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is a game that if you look at it, they should win. You know, they got just as much firepower on their offense as Ole Miss
does. And they might be better on defense.
Exactly.
And Vanderbilt's not been that good on defense, but they might be better on defense. Another big game in the SEC – not a big game, but two of the games you pay attention to, of course, UAB at Texas A&M. That's an interesting one. 9-1, Bill Clark down there after no program.
I got UAB to win that.
No program at all. They didn't have a football program. Now they're back in
9-1. 3 or 4 years ago they did?
Yeah. And now they got A&M. MTSU at Kentucky is interesting as well, of course, for those of us in the mid-state area. You can listen tomorrow as the Blue Raiders of MTSU face Kentucky in Lexington. Pregame begins at 10 a.m. with kickoff at 11 a.m. only on 102.5 The Game. Let's squeeze Adam in here. We're going to do some Titans talk, individual matchups that we want to see, Titans and Colts coming up next hour. But Adam in Portland wants to chime in real quick with some advice, some parenting advice, which, of course, we are your home for all things parenting advice. Adam, what's up?
All things parenting. I appreciate it. I got a quick question. Look, I've brought 2-3 years of wonderful material to your show. I think it's time you pay it back and help me out right here, okay? So I've got a 9-year-old son, and I'm taking my wife and my daughter as well to our very first Predators game this weekend.
Awesome.
And I've never been – I've just always kind of – it's not that I didn't want to go. Just always been a little bit too broke to go. Just not had an opportunity. So we're going to our first Predators game. He is not a sports fan, and like at all. And yeah, I love him. He's my pride and joy. He's super, super smart, man. Good kid. But I really, you know how much I love sports, man. I want to be able to talk to somebody at home about this. So I want to maximize his experience. And the two people who I think would make it fun for kids are PK and RV, and they're both friends. Yeah. So I think the Kings suck, so hopefully we win. Like, we got to win. But, like, I want to make sure I maximize his experience. So that's the advice that I was looking for.
All right. Here's what we'll do, Adam. Stick through the break. When we come back, Derek and Braden's advice for maximizing your experience at Bridgestone Arena. This is a self-help show as well. It's what we do here.
We do it all here.
Yeah, we do. Adam, so we'll do that when we come back right here on Morning Drive ESPN 102.5 The Game.